sell the house to you. Just say, sis, please, don't hit me. I've got this. He will show me his diary. Then I say, okay, fine. There's always next time. So we need to cooperate with other people as long as we know that it's not that they are doing that intentionally. They are ignoring us intentionally. So we really appreciate your presence, Comrade Nen. Our agenda is very short in the nature because we have been engaging the department with this mortgage default insurance. And as well with the National Treasury, we did have a session with the National Treasury. But in our interaction, we had so many questions that were unanswered by the department, more especially the issue of the rationale for capitalization instead of a guarantee. Because our understanding is that the president, in his announcement, in his State of the Nation, announced that there's going to be 1 billion rand guarantee fund for the gap market, for those that are not able to be, human settlements development grant can be addressed their plight. So we also ask the questions of affordability and sustainability. So we were not certain. In fact, in the last presentation, it was most highly technical. You know, the politicians, it was straight that is going to benefit our people. So that is why I said, no, it was highly technical. At least we requested that a person only understanding with one common understanding as a politician to come and address us on this matter. But there are other issues we thought that we need to share with you, Honorable Deputy Minister, because through our oversight, there are issues of the policy gap that we have identified. But it's not necessary that you can respond to them today. But we'll just share those issues that we have observed that there are issues around the policy gaps that we believe that they can be sorted out in future. So with those few words, you are more than welcome. We welcome Honorable Comrade Wethu Matali. You are more than welcome, Comrade Matali. This is the Committee of Human Settlements. You can see. No. Once the premier will, yes, like that. So you are more than welcome in this committee. You can see it's a fully fledged. You will never find this committee so to accurate obtain. What I like about this committee, Comrade Ned, you can't detect who is what? Who is ANC? Who's DA? Who's, you know, when we articulate, we are just all public representatives. We are looking at the issues that are going to benefit the public. So what I like about this committee, when we agree on something, we agree on that something all of. If there's something that we don't see to eye, we discuss it. We convince each other with why we are saying you can take this route and why we are saying we cannot take this route. So that is a very good. I appreciate to be in this committee. And all of us, we are equal. Even me as a chairperson, I listen to the people, what they want to say. So thank you so much. Mr. Stein, you are welcome.
Thanks. Thank you very much. We're all members of parliament. That's a very. You know, when the chairperson cornered me yesterday, I tried to take her through my diary. Again, I did not know I was going to be coming to the committee. I said to her, Chairperson, look at this. So we went through together. We said at 8:30 it's the ICTS Cap Committee. At 9 o'clock it's a briefing by the Land Bank. At 10 o'clock it's a joint meeting of all committees. At 10:30 it's the EUSAID. At 1300 the portfolio committee, and I wanted to see what portfolio committee this is, and it turned out that it's this one. So I was telling Comrade Gloria here that this is my fourth already, and I'm left with three more meetings for the day. So that's unfortunately my life. But thanks, members of the committee, and your insistence, Chairperson. You know, I've always wanted to do it, but every time it has not been possible, and I'm glad we finally managed to get this. And it was through your insistence again that we also agreed that we should have a workshop. And through your insistence again, no. If the workshop is technical, let's come down to our level, because, you know, as policymakers, ours is to set the policy stage and then we give it to the technocrats. And once if the technocrats also don't do what we want to do at policy level, we need to bring it down also to our level so that we are able to move. Firstly, as the chairperson has said, the purpose of this, and that is why the announcement is made by the president. And as finance, we had to come up with the numbers and say to him, Mr. President, we'll put down a billion. The president has made an announcement that he says there are people who earn too much to qualify for government subsidy, but also who earn too little for the finance institutions to be able to fund them through the mortgage system. So this is the so-called gap market now that we are trying to close. So in order to do that, there are a number of mechanisms, and the mortgage default insurance is but one of those. But the mortgage insurance, and as the chairperson again has indicated, that the question that arises is, we said it's going to be a guarantee, why a capitalization? There basically isn't much of a difference between the two. The only thing we are saying is that what form should the guarantee take? You know, from the fiscus, all we are saying is that from the fiscus you make funds available. But how do you allocate the funds? Where do you place the funds? You need to place the funds in a vehicle that is going to be able to guarantee the financing of the gap market. So there isn't much of a difference. I'm just going to take you through why, when you look at the two, then you actually would think they are different. But mainly, in terms of achieving the purpose, you need both. But it's the same fund we are talking here. You take the fund and you put it in the form of a structure that would be, the reason why we say it's capitalization, it is because it needs to be housed the NHFC. And if you give them that fund, you can't just give it to them and call it a guarantee, because it needs to develop a life of its own. But you now need a combination of the two. You need government and the private sector to come in, because this scheme is going to benefit the borrowers and the lenders. And in order for the insurance to be successful, both borrowers and lenders need to commit to something. Because if you just put in the money and say the lenders can have a field day, then you are running the risk of actually what we always have as government, and what Parliament always accuses us of doing, of setting up structures, setting up institutions that we always have to feed all the time because they cannot sustain themselves. So in order for the fund to be able to develop a life of its own, but at the same time be able to sustain itself beyond the allocation, because if you put in a billion today, if you do not do this, you are going to have to put in a billion again once this billion is exhausted, and put in a billion again, or even more than a billion, because at the end of the day, if the money goes to paying salaries, to paying everything else other than the financing and making sure that we cover the gap that we are trying to cover, then the funds are not doing what they are supposed to do. So we want to take equal pay. You know, when people complain, when people want to judge an equal pay, they always use the analogy of the English breakfast, where the chicken, they say the chicken contributes an egg, and the pig commits itself for bacon. You know, and so now we need equal commitment here. We need everyone to take the same amount of pain, but also we need everybody also to take the same amount of benefit. Because at the end of the day, if the lenders are the only ones that are cushioned, and if we look at the source of the crisis looking back in 2008, we all know that it actually emanated from the housing market. It did two things when the crisis hit, particularly the U.S. The financial institutions funded people that did not have income, that didn't have jobs, because for them what was important is to be able to sell debt. Once they had sold debt, it created a bubble in the housing market. The assets now being, in the hands of people that cannot afford to pay for. And when crunch time came, it crashed. When it crashed, it affected all of us. It did not only affect the U.S. because when debt is extended, even if it's extended to individuals, at the end of the day, if the risk is spread, as you will see with this insurance is actually pooling the risk so that we then package it in such a manner that we all, you know, contribute, but at the same all benefit out of it. So it's that commitment that now then thought capitalize the fund, but then the fund will serve as a guarantee. So the two come, that's where the two words come now. You are capitalizing the fund, but the fund is going to be a guarantee fund because it's an insurance. An insurance guarantees that in the event of, we will come to the party. But we should also guard against a situation where you create a situation where then we will default, because you have now created an environment where it is easy to default. But if you haven't put in place the proper mechanisms to be able to regulate the environment, you'll end up in a situation where everybody comes in, and because I know I'm going to default and end up with an asset in my hands. And with the banks also knowing that, look, I will also have my money back. It doesn't matter, but it's not coming from me. It is coming from the state. So why don't we just say then that we are now going to subsidize everyone. But we will all know that the subsidies on their own, if we were going to try to do that, the country will not afford that. So what we're saying is that the people that are above 3,500 but below the 15,000 are this gap market, which the state wants to assist to access houses in the form of supporting them and also creating a credit worthiness in the gap market, but also giving comfort to the financial institutions that should they default, but not that they must go and default, but should they default, the state is there to back them. That's the. So if I were to then go to the questions, in your letter, Chair, ask this question, which I was now trying to address, why the fund has been shifted from being a guarantee into a capitalization. It's not actually shifting from a guarantee into capitalization. We are capitalizing the fund because capitalizing the fund is putting capital into a particular vehicle that will serve a particular purpose. That is what we are trying to do. There is, Chair, we just didn't, I will leave this with you. Then you can make copies, because this also just gives some valuable information to members as to this gap household that we are talking about that falls between the cracks. In 2011, census showed that there are 14.5 4 or 5 million households in South Africa, and 65% of households that earn below 3,500 per month, with 78% of households living in informal housing. The low-income housing program has provided 2.8 million houses to households, which means you can see we're left with 14 million that fall within the cracks when we have only been able to house 2.8 million. And then this graph will actually show you this part is the one with no income at all, income from, up to 400 rands, the various incomes. But then when you get here, the people in the high income end are the ones that are okay and they are able to afford the houses. But also the risk for these people, because the financial institutions will look at the ability to pay, but also the risk of default, because that's the combination of the two. And unfortunately, in the financial industry, if you are high risk, what will happen is the price you will pay will be higher. if I were to do that without using the yardstick that the financial industry uses, I would think that the high-risk person needs to be, it is because the person doesn't have adequate income, therefore that person must actually pay a lower interest rate. No, but the way they price the risk, the way risk is priced, it is priced in terms of your interest rate, so I will charge you a higher interest rate. So then the fund will have to do, what the fund will then have to do is to mitigate that risk first, to create an environment where when you are high risk, because the state backs you, then you are then, your risk is lowered so that you are able to pay an interest that everybody else pays. That's what the fund does, the first thing that it will do. And therefore, it then guarantees that even though you are high risk, but because you are backed by the state, then you are now low risk. So because your risk of you defaulting has been mitigated. That's the importance of saying this is now an insurance. We insure against that risk. I don't want to go further than that into detail before Chairperson, you say it's getting technical again. Yes, that's the reason. That's the reason why I came alone without them, because if I were to ask them now to explain what I've just said, it would be technical again. So I'm just trying to stay away from the technicalities that explain what is the price of risk. I don't want to go into how technocrats would explain what the price of risk, and I think I was clear when I said that all we are doing is we're saying we reduce the cost of borrowing to you because your risk of being a candidate for default has been reduced. That's all. So then the changing from guaranteed capitalization is explained in that form. Then you ask what was the intended purpose of the fund, and how does the current proposal affect the politics of the intended purpose? It affects it because what we are doing is we are, whilst trying to instill discipline and sustainability in the industry, but at the same time we are opening it up to people who otherwise would have been termed risky to the industry. But we want everybody, as I said earlier, to take equal responsibility for the fund. And you know, the banks, besides that they will price the risk for people who are prone to default, they are even reluctant to lend to those households. And that creates an environment where people will always... And you know, a house is the most valuable asset that any individual or household would want to invest in. We work our entire lives. In my culture, if a person doesn't have a house and he's got a family, you know, he is looked down upon. You know, it doesn't matter what the quality of the house is. At least you must have a house. And now, we are now saying, but it must also be a decent, house. And that is where government comes in now to say, but there are people who cannot afford, and therefore the government comes in. And it, you know, and the interesting thing also about the gap market, when we say anybody below or anybody above 3,500 does not qualify, even if you are 3,501 rand above, you already are above the threshold, so you don't qualify. So ask yourself then, what does the difference of 1 rand make to your income to then disqualify you from qualifying? I mean, from being to me, the difference between a person who earns 2,900 and a person who earns 3,501, there isn't a difference. Therefore, and that is why now it will start taking you from there and operate on a progressive basis, which means your subsidy at that level becomes bigger, and as you move up, your subsidy becomes smaller, because then you are in a bracket that will be able to accommodate that, and then you end up reaching a point where you will be evaluated on the merits of your income. That is how it will work. And when you do get this, this is where this is explained, where you find the gap opening up as a result of your income around. And then the next question also then was, the next question is the same question that I've been trying to explain, which is the difference between the guarantee and the capitalization. I think I've clarified that. And then the next one, what underpins the political aspect that made the National Treasury to opt? The interesting thing about my kind of work is that while all other departments are concerned with how much their departments, again, it's the pig and the... Oh, they're complaining that I'm too loud. They want... No. I'm disturbing them in their sleep. They are enjoying the comfort zone here. But the again, it's the chicken and the egg story. It's the chicken and the pig story with us in the Treasury, because all other departments, they can put together plans, and once they've put together plans, they would expect the Treasury just to put the money on the table. And our concern is, if we put money on the table, we need to be satisfied that the money, where we are putting money, is where it would actually be in the best interest of the country. And unfortunately, we don't allocate funds to ourselves. All the funds that we have, if you were to go to the annual reports and look at how much goes to the National Treasury, very little. Even when we are accused of underspending, it is because of the money that we have withheld from other entities that we haven't given the money because we were not happy with how the money has been spent. And unfortunately, with the Auditor General, they will find it in our own books, and then we will be accused of having not spent the money. And yet, the reason why we are not going to spend the money is because we were scared that where we would be putting the money, we would not be serving the interests of the country. So the Department of Human Settlements, and this committee is responsible for oversight of the Department of Human Settlements. For them, the interest or their focus was on getting the fund off the ground. And ours was to first satisfy ourselves that when funds are released, they are released to where they are supposed to be going. So the issue of the business case was, at the top of the agenda for a very long time. We just wanted to be satisfied in the interest also to protect the department, because we did not want... The calculations were very clear with what had been presented to us, that 7 years down the line, we would have to recapitalize the fund again. And as a result, the Treasury said, no, let's have a plan. So we started working together with the Department of Human Settlements in putting together a business case that would be able to be sustainable, but at the same time progressively begin to realize the objective of closing the gap market. And we have now been able to do that. But also, one of the things we wanted to do was to bring on board the banks, because they will benefit from the mortgage default insurance. and therefore they will, because they will gain new business, and but we needed them to come to the party with an equal commitment also of saying that, so that there is proper governance also of the insurance itself. We needed everybody to commit to making sure that we are able to put together a workable program and put in place the governance structures, but also comply with our financial regulatory framework, which is supervised by the Financial Services Board. So the NHFC now assumes the responsibility of a financial service provider, which must now be regulated in terms of the Financial Services Board, like everybody else, in order to protect both the consumer but also the industry, because as I said earlier, that if anything happens in the housing market, it has a devastating effect on the entire economy, as we saw when this happened in the U.S. And the Financial Stability Board actually started imposing things that otherwise had not been imposed in the past, including the capital adequacy ratios, because we should be able to evaluate the performance of any financial institution in terms of its soundness, prudential, and market conduct as well. So that's what actually took a bit of time. So now granting this guarantee must indicate that what we were doing also is now we were signaling also to the market that we have an entity that is in a sound financial position and that will be able to meet its liabilities over a period on a sustainable basis. And therefore, a review of the insurance model was done in March 2013, and the initial pricing showed that it was unsustainable and would require recapitalization within 7 years, as I said. Therefore, should the state issue a guarantee, if the state had issued a guarantee on the basis of that business case, the credibility of the country's financial management will have been questioned and been jeopardized, with the implications for future debt costs, because when debt costs is impacted upon in other area, it has a ripple effect. With capitalization, the state is an equity party working with the banking sector to ensure that these objectives are met, and we've been engaging with the Banking Association South Africa, and they're happy with the model that is on the table now. And I think we are in a position that we would be able to move working with the Department of Human Settlements, and that the entity now, the NHFC, is in a position to be able to do this. All we need now is for the NHFC to display, to demonstrate that they now have everything in place, and for the funds to be released, and for this committee to play its role in terms of oversight, but in terms of directing us to move forward in a sustainable manner. Members of the committee, let me leave it here, and trust that I succeeded in not being technical. I don't know whether I succeeded in explaining, but in not being getting in any of the technicalities of the bill.
Thank you very much, Honourable Deputy Minister. Honourable members, over to you, Honourable Stein, Honourable Bowman, for now. Steve. Honourable Stein. Okay, I'm sure you're going to follow Honourable Bowman. Yes. Bula.
So thank you very much, Chairperson, and I'm just comfortable that Honorable Stein is here today because of his always being referring me as Honorable Stein. So, just to say thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. I think you have definitely succeeded in explaining this animal to us, because for us it's always been an elephant in the room and we've been battling. It was always inside, but to get it outside has always been a difficult task for us. So thank you very much for making it very much easy. they always say in marketing terms, if you can't explain it in 5 minutes, then it's not worth it. And I think you've done very much well on that one, because as the chairperson has said, the issue for us was the issue of capitalization vis-a-vis guarantee, and I think you've said it very well that it will remain a guarantee fund. Just a couple of issues and concerns that you can clarify. In terms of the accessibility of the fund, do you think that centralizing it in the NHFC make it accessible for this gap market? Because the reason why I ask you that is we've been saying to the department, why don't you make it accessible that each and every person in the gap market can have access to it? If you centralize it along the NHFC, does it hinder it in terms of making it accessible? Secondly, is the issue of the partnership with the financial institutions. We were given an impression that there was reluctance in terms of partnering with the financial institutions in terms of making this work, because we've been seeing it coming up slow. And I think with that, I'm trying to link it with the FLISP, because of we haven't seen much progress in as far as the FLISP application is concerned. And I think, again, it goes to the issue of accessibility. The other one, Chair, is that I think the issue of self-sustainability is very much important, that this NHFC should be self-sustainable moving forward. And it also offers choice for the gap market, because one thing that we haven't done is to make sure that the gap market have got the choice. And I think when I'm saying choice, Chair, I'm talking about choice in terms of accessibility once again, to say that myself as a gap market, do I have a choice of what type of house I want and what location where I want to live? Does that give me that flexibility? And lastly, Chair, is the issue of the credit amnesty that you have announced. To what extent does it impact on the MDI moving forward? Because of the credit amnesty will write off bad debt, in essence. And then that doesn't mean the problem has been dealt with. We just dealt with the symptom of the problem, but now the problem is you're still going to have bad debt, even though it's being written off, because of those people might not be in a position to access credit. So to what will be the impact of the credit amnesty on the sustainability of the lenders moving forward in accessing this? But in a nutshell, I think you've clarified the issues that we had in as far as this is concerned. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I think it is all quite clear. And I think possibly the questions that we now have are more for NHFC than what they are for you, Deputy Minister, and I think I think that's very helpful indeed, because there's nothing like getting everybody around the same table to resolve these things. So, and I think from my side, I think now this has been on the table for so long, and there's such a desperate need out there in this gap market for people to have homes. Can I also, and so therefore there's a lot of setting up, but I'm sure that NHFC have now done, I mean, there are boards to be set up and licenses to be had, and I don't know if all that, you know, if they come to Treasury for all of that as well, but that must be all part of the business plan, and whether that is in place as far as Treasury goes. Can I just ask, in this 1 billion rand now with the capitalization, that will be paid over into an account. Will that be paid over into the account of this what is now the Financial Services Board within the NHFC? And then does that generate interest? Because I want to understand how, on the one hand, capitalization is sustainable, and I understand the combination. I don't know if I'm going to put this very well. If it was purely just a guarantee fund, so I'm wanting to be clear about the capitalization. Is it because that has interest accruing? So I think that would be my question. The rest would be to NHFC.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to latch on to the last question. I'm not sure. Maybe I've been away from housing too long. I don't actually see quite the difference between what we've had and what we're talking about, the guarantee fund and the capitalization fund. Because the guarantee fund, as it was initially established, was still going to be funded by Treasury. So they were still going to capitalize it. I mean, if you're going to put money into it, you're capitalizing it. So I don't quite see what the difference is going to be, because presumably it's still going to be administered by the NHFC along the same lines. And should that, for whatever reason, that initial 1 billion rand be used up in guarantees, then Treasury has to come back and recapitalize. So I'm not too sure still what this difference has been, what we've achieved, other than you indicated that you've made you've done some research. And it looked to you that under the old guarantee fund, within 7 years, you would have had to recapitalize. But under this capitalization fund, the risk still exists that you may have to recapitalize in 7 years or even sooner. So I'm just not sure what are we achieving, what benefit are we getting by, and under the guarantee fund, there would have been, the money would have been placed somewhere, but there would still have been interest accruing to that account. So I don't really know how we're making it, and there were questions about the accessibility and so on. So is it easier to access? How is it different to what was announced 3 years ago in the budget speech and by the President in his opening speeches? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Colonel Chair. Now, Chair, I think that this issue has always been like, you know, weak and scattered thoughts. I think that the Deputy Minister has actually tried to translate that and convert that into a strong and calculated force. Actually, now we have some sort of directive as where this fund is going and where this issue of capitalization is going. But in dealing with that, there's just one aspect that I think that there's a lot of things that the NHFC had indicated, like the model that they had to come up with, and they were looking at studies in India who had a very good model, etc. So the issue of capitalization will actually have to run concurrent with the issue of the model that comes up. But it seems to have some sort of contradiction, and I might be wrong, that the issue of the risk factor, we speak about the risk factor and the guarantee that the state would give. My question is that if the state gives a guarantee, and if the person is at default, the percentage that the state would cover where the person is in default, will it be contrary to the person who actually will get a proportional subsidy? Because if a person will get a subsidy in terms of his or her earnings, but the state will give a complete guarantee of the debt, is there not a contradiction between the two concepts? Chair, I'll just leave it there for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks, DM, for giving more clarity, because we didn't know where to get most of the answers. And we thank Chairperson for inviting the DM. My question has been asked about the, I was going to ask about the credit amnesty, Chairperson. But let me go to this one of the borrowers and lenders. I heard the DM talking about that both the borrowers and the lenders need to commit to something. And unfortunately, I was going out. I didn't have more information about borrowers and lenders. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, DM. Over to you. I think you have to also link this to this FLISP, because FLISP is also managed by, administered by NHFC. And so we feel that NHFC has got a lot in his plate, and we have got a lot of questions about NHFC. We are not happy in terms of their interest they are charging to people. Even their service, in fact, we have been questioning them for quite a long time. But we don't see them on the ground. Where are they operating? And if you can look at these evictions, most of them are from NHFC. NHFC is involved. So we've got a lot of questions about NHFC. But I think the issue of FLISP is also a concern to us. So if you can also ask us, help us just to what is the link between these two? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I do not want to pretend to have all the answers, but I'm going to attempt respond to the extent that I would be able to, but if that is not adequate, we will then have to find time or more information with regards to some of the questions that members are asking, because I would now want to believe that this is now an opportunity for the committee to begin to take the process forward sooner rather than. This has to be augmented through legislation. Yes, as usual. And we will have to legislate for it. But it's not new legislation. It's it would not even amendment. It's through regulations, because you're just creating a structure within the existing environment, and that is why it's important to use existing ones, because had it not been, if the Department of Human Settlements had come up and said, no, as you are raising issues with the NHFC, it would have meant establishing a new entity that would be able to house the guarantee fund, and that would have taken much longer. So as we speak now, it's to give them a set of principles along which they actually have to establish a subsidiary of the NHFC. So it's not a new entity altogether. But the issue of the accessibility, I must say that with the technology and with the network that our institutions now do have, And that is why it's important to get the buy-in of the financial existing financial institutions also, that you can apply for funding. And depending which category you fall into, you would then be assisted in terms of the new dispensation. So it doesn't matter where you are applying from. So accessibility would be when you go to a financial institution, when in the past the financial institution would have said, we cannot fund you, the financial institution will then call on the guarantee as a result of your standing. You are an employee of the state, this is your earning, and this is, and people of this category are backed by this this insurance. You therefore fall in that category, and they will deal with you in terms of that, in terms of the dispensation. So accessing it is accessing it through there. That's why it's important to have the financial institutions on board. And the NHFC will then be an accountable institution that at the end of the day, they are the custodians of the guarantee or of the fund. Again, going back to the question that I was trying to address earlier, that is why I kept on repeating this thing that there isn't a difference between the two. The only difference is that the other is a process through which funds are introduced into the guarantee fund. That's what recapitalization means. It's the dictionary meaning of the word recapitalization is injecting capital or putting capital into a vehicle to achieve a particular objective. A lot of financial institutions and a lot of government entities were established by capitalizing them. So how you then refer to the institution is something else, but putting money in there is called capitalization. You're putting capital into in order to establish a particular institution. Here we are saying, here is a guarantee fund. How do you finance a guarantee fund? You finance a guarantee fund through capitalization. That's the long and short of this capitalization and the guarantee fund story. And but what is going to be the nature of the guarantee fund? The guarantee fund is going to be called the mortgage default insurance. Then all these names, as long as we understand what they do, they actually don't mean anything. All that we need to understand is what then is it going to do. Insuring something means that you are then putting a guarantee in the event of a particular eventuality. If it was a human being, if you are insured against death, should you die, this is what we will pay. Should this house be damaged, this is what we will, you know, and that's the what the mortgage default. And then if I were to take that now, and then that, hence the partnership with the bank is critical, and that I'm trying to link the two with you, the three now, the NHFC, the banks, again, the FLISP. I think it's an area that we might still have to sit down and look at if there are issues with the FLISP, get to understand from our side what exactly the issues are, and I would imagine we would be in a position to. And that is why also even the business model, the reason, the biggest delay, Mr. State, was with regards to the business model. This business model is unsustainable. And now one of the things we have achieved is that we now have a business model that we are convinced that it is sustainable, and we all need to move now in that direction and nowhere else. And that's where monitoring becomes critical again, because the plan might actually be credible and we are agreed that it's sustainable, but if it is not implemented to the letter, we then have a problem again. But we should be able to hold people accountable for an established fund, including the choice of a house. You would choose the house of the value that you think you can afford in terms of your income, because this house is not given to you as houses that are given to people that receive a full subsidy from the state. Your subsidy, as Mr. Buller is saying, that it is on a graduated approach. So we fund and guarantee a portion, not the entire, because the rest of it, actually, if you are in that income bracket, you can actually fund a portion of your own, of your, of your own. So the guarantee is on the portion that otherwise would not have been funded, and that would have actually acted as a disincentive for financing institution to finance you, because they would sit here and evaluate you and say, no, 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 you don't qualify. Simple. And that's, you will get a rejection. Here now, they cannot reject you, because they will say, if you were just look, we were looking at your income only, you wouldn't qualify. Or you would qualify for something that wouldn't build a house. For instance, if you are a 3-5 and we look at you at your income, perhaps you would qualify for a house that would have, for instance, cost 35,000. You know, and then you can't build a house for 35,000, because even the government subsidies have now actually increased far beyond that, because you cannot build a structure for anything for that amount. So, and then they would then say, but you want a house for 260,000. The difference between what you would have been able to finance and what we are now financing you for is now going to be carried by the state. So that's how we deal with the, yeah, that with that contradiction that Mr. Bula was referring to. Credit amnesty. Let me explain the credit amnesty. There is a huge confusion, and the minister, our minister, was very adamant that we do not use the word credit amnesty in what we have just now adopted in cabinet, because it's not writing off of bad debt. It is actually credit information that needs to be removed from the credit bureaus for people who have been blacklisted, some unfairly, some because they really haven't paid, so that people are given an opportunity of getting their house in order. So no debt is going to be written off. We're not writing off debt this time around, because we would be promoting moral hazard if we wrote debt off. But we're saying you are given an opportunity to get your house in order in terms of the Credit Act, so that also this thing has to do with the lenders themselves who have been reckless in lending to people who otherwise do not qualify. So we're saying, don't just blacklist people. Allow people an opportunity to get their house in order. And those that actually continue not to pay during this time, when they drift into this, make sure that they are given an adequate opportunity to be able to have their house in order and clear. So it's not writing off of debt. This credit amnesty is not. It's credit information amnesty. It is the information that will be removed, whether you have paid or you have not. But it will be giving you an opportunity to clear, to. Absolutely, absolutely. No, no, no. This one, this time around, it doesn't do that, because we would be promoting moral hazard. So, and I indicated, Comrade Gloria, that when you sit with the NHFC, it would be useful that we are around, so that we can actually be able to understand what are the issues that otherwise would require our attention in order to resolve. With regards to the billion, you know, when guarantees are issued, actually when we issue guarantees, we issue paper, we don't issue money. We don't issue money. We issue paper and we say, yeah, I stand. You know, I stand here behind you. You know that your child goes out to borrow, he's at school, or he or she is at school, if he goes out to borrow from people, they will give your child some money, because not on the basis of his creditworthiness, but because they know if he doesn't pay, he will pay. You know, when my son started renting out, there were video cassettes when he grew up. In my rural area, the others didn't have, so say we were one of a few that, you know, could afford. So he would rent them out for 2 rand a day. He said he's accumulating money to be able to buy his own. But if his friend didn't pay, he took his bike, he would tell me that he's going to the neighbor's place. He wouldn't tell me why he's going there. And when he gets there, he meets his friend at the gate, he asks for his father. Can I speak to your dad? And the father comes out and says, look, I have a problem here. So-and-so took my video cassette yesterday, and he hasn't returned it. And now he now has incurred an additional 2 rand. Can you please pay for him and tell him to give me my video cassette? I get calls from neighbors saying, how can you teach this little child these bad habits? This young man comes here. I thought you had sent him to me, but he'd come to collect his money. He knew this young man now. Won't afford the additional 2 rand. So let me rather go to the person. There is the guarantee. Guarantee is with the father. He gave it to him knowing that he will collect the money from. So he taught me a very good lesson. That don't talk to the person who owes you money, because the fact that he was not able to pay the principal debt, where on earth do you think he's going to get the additional money? Rather go to the other one. So that's what government does, and that's what the NHFC will be doing, will be standing guarantor, and will be standing behind. And that is why because there will also be repayments, and that is why we're inviting banks also to come to the party, because in order for them to operate in an environment that has got this kind of comfort, they themselves will have to buy into it. So they themselves will have to put in money. It's their business, and it's business, and so government, the bulk of the burden will fall on government's shoulders, but business, that's why we're calling on this partnership with the banking industry. And this is the comfort they now have, that the state says we go in here, we will regulate together. You know, there are a few things that we have said in order for it to work, for the implementation of mortgage default insurance to be viable. There are 4 things that we have said are going to be critical. 1, effective contract enforcement. You sign a contract with me, you're going to pay through a stop order. I will have to make sure that that is enforced. Functioning systems for mortgage and title registration and transfer and assignment. That system must work perfectly. Once I have bought a house and the house is mine, like when you buy a car, they keep the logbook until you have finished paying and all sorts of things. That enforcement will have to work, but also the transfers must be done timeously and properly. Effective banking and insurance regulation. And the fourth one is reliable judicial and court system that would actually treat everyone fairly, but also family, to make sure that people don't just default because there is this backup from this parent. So the even the interest that it makes and the repayments, that we expect the fund to be able to grow, but to grow in order to be able to accommodate the others, not necessarily to grow just to make a profit, but to be able to be plowed back. And we would expect that we can only recapitalize, not because the funds have been depleted through reckless behaviors, but because the numbers of people are growing, and we are beginning to see value in investing in this, and the banks will be doing the same also. The more this happens, you know, one of the things that we're discussing with the banks in South Africa, which we didn't have in the past, is also creating deposit insurance. That when banks go under, who is it that comes in? It is the state that comes in. And yet, when the banks make money, all the profits go to the shareholders. So we're saying, let's actually invest in something that actually strengthens our financial system, so that the things that have happened in the past, our Sambos and the rest, do not reoccur. So the same thing we want to instill in this environment again, in the housing one. And as I said earlier, housing actually plays a key role in the asset market, because that's where the price of assets is determined. So, again, to answer you, Mr. Steyn, there isn't much of a difference. All we're trying to do now is to clarify that we now have a business plan that can be implemented. Here is an opportunity to move on and implement it. We haven't changed anything. Capitalization is still a vehicle through which funds are injected into the default mortgage insurance. So that's what we have achieved over the period, and I think it's been time well spent. Yes, it's taken too long, but I think we are now ready to be able to move. And therefore, the capitalization again. I just keep on repeating this thing of capitalization, because I want us to, you know, to understand that it's not in the names; it's in what it is that we do. And therefore, the lenders and borrowers. Again, what I was saying earlier was that we will all benefit, and we should therefore all pay the price. If we are all going to benefit, That's why I made an analogy of the pig and the chicken. And somebody else also, when we said that the chicken only makes a contribution, somebody said, look, the contribution that the chicken makes is far more than the commitment of the pig, because the chicken actually donates its own children. These are babies to the chicken. You call it an egg, it's a child. And the pig that dies might actually a pig that has already overstayed its welcome on this earth. Maybe it's old. So why not, you know? And here is somebody, you know what you do as a good parent? You would protect your kids with everything you have. So for the chicken, when you lift it and pull out the egg, you must know that you actually have taken a future chicken. So they might not be chickens. So, and as they would say in another analogy, don't kill the goose that lays the egg. But maybe the analogy should be saying, it's okay if the goose dies after it has hatched the egg. Why not? Why not? Because if it has hatched the egg, you now have another goose that will lay the egg. Yeah. So it is that what we are dealing with. But the lenders and borrowers need to play their part. And I think as the state, our responsibility is to make sure that the playing field is level, and also that there is fairness, and that the borrowers are not exploited, but also that the lenders continue to be sustainable, but also that they are not reckless in what they do, and the state comes in to ensure that that relationship is properly managed. I said I can't pretend to have all the answers. If you still have more questions, even beyond this, please feel free, even if you just drop them in, not only through parliamentary questions, but through the chairperson. The chairperson is able to ambush me even in the house, and I'm quite happy. If I have the answers, I will give it. If I don't, I will go out and seek the answers.
Thank you, Chair. Just a last question. I think we fully agree that the lenders and the borrowers need to come together. Otherwise, the lenders become reckless in their lending. What is the risk sharing between the lenders, the banks, and government? And does it differ as the risk profile of the lender increases? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, just one issue. I think the Deputy Minister spoke about accessibility and he said it will be directly. Now it begs the question, do we really have to have this being administered by NHFC? I think that is the bone of contention for us, because we've seen FLISP not getting off the ground because of it being centralized under NHFC. Now, if you are saying it's accessible directly and technology is there and you've got the buy-in of the financial institutions, then what is the role of NHFC? Shouldn't it be administered directly so that people have direct access on that one? What is the role of NHFC?
Chair, yes, I think there's one thing that we learned, that parents now can be regarded as collateral security. Minister, I hear the issue about those in terms of the Credit Act and those that are blacklisted, and there would be no debt write-off. Will those that are currently that are on blacklisted, will they be prejudiced?
Comrade, you assist us in terms of the regulations, because as you are listening to this discussion, NHFC, So I think National Treasurer, the office is going to assist us in terms of making sure that the regulations are tightened, because NHFC is a loose cannon. So because really we are not comfortable. One time we were also asking the department that this institution was established by yourself. Why are you not able to oversee, to monitor? Because the department was officially coming silly now. business on NHFC. Sorry, I've got a serious problem.
But you said a little bit, it could take time to open up another entity. Now that there is something there, maybe we can try and be sure that we are thinking of, so that we can have an entity which is going to deal with this one. Because you must not align or to be a subsidiary of NFC. Then if we can say we can open it will not take us too long. It's just to nurse this NFC. If we can open it, we can work in the evening at night and make the point that it's there.
Whatever, Chow. As is fun as entities, I think you... as entities, come at them, as is fun, because in the SSI observer, would imali spend too much by these entities, and imali, yes, because imali means, once you create this entity, you will find yourself that you have to have gonogram and lot of CEOs and so on and so on. So uba machoba ndiya mazi uchuso ngumsindo. Masivumelane ukuthi ngeke siphinde create enye entity. Salampela ngoku, salampela. But ke le ekhoyo, if you can assist us ukuthi regulations at least. Nathi we are going to, in fact, regulations ziza ukuthi fortunately. Thina savumelane ukuthi kule committee regulations so we think that in time is going to rescue the situation in Dabaga NHS.
Now it seems like members have issues with the NHFC and trying very hard not to respond to the issues of it. Yes, and how I wish I would be in the room. I won't answer questions on that day. I just want to be there. Yes, but you see, there's always one thing that... I find normally does not help the situation. Every time we find something that is not working, we create another. You know, I think we should guard against that. If something is not working, I think we need to find an amicable way of resolving what is not working in that institution. Because normally, I don't think when you say something is not working, it's not the whole organization that's not working. There might be elements. You know, this morning I was the other side at V475 with the land bank. The land bank, a subsidiary of the state, was not working. It had issues. All we did was to put in the proper leadership in that bank. There was a proclamation that took it to the National Treasury. I'm not saying that bring the NHFC to the National Treasury, because I think we have a lot on our plate. I don't think we will be able to resuscitate an institution. But it just took the proper leadership, people that were taken, that were prepared to take unpopular decisions, people that were prepared to go in the right direction against all odds. It was very difficult. At the beginning, there were people that were fighting tooth and nail because there were people that had benefited improperly from the land bank, the golf courses that had been built, all sorts of things. We just had to make sure that we had to put a bulldozer. Those that need to be arrested, arrest them. Those that need to be fired, fire them. Those that need to be, reoriented, do that. And the institution took a bit of time. But it's now, the land bank is something that actually goes out now into the market, and people are quite willing to invest their money in an institution that they can actually tell that it is making progress. And it is also achieving its intended objective on the ground now of funding the small emerging farmers. We now have hived off money out of the normal funding process to be able to assist those in distress And once you assist those in distress, they get back onto their feet. They themselves continue repaying their debt, and they build the non-performing loan book has actually reduced, with the performing loan book increasing as the story would happen. So I would want to believe that. I think we need to identify what's not working with the NHFC and get the NHFC working. But the subsidiary we are talking about is a subsidiary that should be established in terms of the Financial Services Board that would have to meet all the requirements of the Financial Services Board and be able to do what we wanted to do. And therefore, with the oversight from this committee, and once it is listed with the Financial Services Board, you will now have a shared responsibility with the Portfolio Committee on Finance also to oversee us, to oversee that institution, because it will be a financial service provider within the NHFC, but it will be a financial service provider, so it will have to register in terms of the Financial Services Board. And we are busy strengthening that area also in terms of the Twin Peaks approach, where the prudential side will actually reside with the bank, with the central bank, with the market conduct side residing with the Financial Services Board in order to protect the consumers. So I think it's something that we can get to work. Putting regulations together for a financial services institution should be a task that we undertake together with the Department of Human Settlements, with the Treasury. So we will have to play a role because it is a financial institution. And where we put funds, we have a responsibility of making sure that those funds are spent. The risk profile, I don't have the actual numbers with regards to what the percentages are going to be, and that's it's something that I would be able to get for you. But the bulk of the burden will fall on the shoulders of the state in this instance, because what we are doing is taking over the responsibility of guaranteeing, being that as a parent, playing as a parent to make sure that our children get funded, because the state has a responsibility of making sure that every South African is properly housed, but those that can afford also pay their fair share of what they need to pay. The issue of the credit amnesty prejudicing those, you know, the only thing that we're saying is let's regularize things. This is an opportunity, it's a window of opportunity to get things regularized. You are in debt. The National Credit Act allows for, you know, debt counseling, debt consolidation, go through the process, cleanse yourself, repent, because the day is coming. That's all that is happening. People are just given that window of opportunity. It's a time of grace. It's that period of mercy. Yes, just repent, you know, and the state is offering also through the National Credit Regulator a mechanism of helping you also to cleanse yourself, rehabilitate, and once rehabilitated, you know what happens when you don't. So I think our people, because we want to get people on the right footing, some people actually got there, not of their own making, even though there are people that actually got there because of their own irresponsible behaviors. But we are also calling on the lenders themselves. You know, this thing of, you know, these messages that people get, you have a pre-approved loan and what have you and what have you. Those are the things that have actually lent some of the people, because when people see that, you know, I can't wake up in the morning and I'm broke and somebody tells me that if I walk into the bank now, he's going to give me a loan. He doesn't tell me what the implications are going to be, and he's going to, when he wants his money back, it's something else. But when he wanted me to take the loan, it was a different story. That's another area where we should actually tighten, and we want the NCR also to tighten that side on the lender's side. But we want responsible lenders, but also we want borrowers to be careful when there is no Mother Christmas walking around with, I don't want to refer to Father Christmas. There's no Mother Christmas walking around with your Christmas present before Christmas. You see? I don't know. I'm not too sure about it. He brings presents, not mothers. Okay, mothers receive presents. No, they receive presents. But once again, I will get you the actual numbers with regards to the risk profile. I don't have them with me at the moment. But the issue of the performance of the fleet, we've actually got it on record here that there are issues, and I think it's something that we need to assist in getting it back on track. But if something is not working, don't create something that you will discover 2 years down the line again that it is not working. And you will have invested time, money, and energy to get it up and running, only to find that it is perhaps worse than the previous one. Why don't we get the other one working? And if there are issues, then that's why you must assist us in your oversight to identify those weaknesses, so that when we work with the relevant institutions, we actually deal with those. Some of us should actually be in a position to do the unenviable thing of doing those things that when you look back, it looks very clean, like somebody who works on, you know, people who do the dirtiest jobs actually do the most rewarding jobs, because you are able to look back and say, nobody's clean. No, but you're dirty. No, but it's clean. You know, you are dirty, but what you have been doing has left a wonderful aura of something that you would be quite happy to walk back. Even the parks are cleaned by people who don't spend time in the park. So, and some departments like ours are charged with that responsibility of coming out smelling badly with the area that you have left smelling like roses. Thanks, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, DM. I think as of now we will be able to market, because you know, we as this portfolio committee, we were having a problem, because even FLISP, we are in full support of FLISP, and we are pushing the department to say that is the program that we can make sure that we reach out to the people, and we are also in support of it, and we can be able to assist the department as politicians to mobilize people so that they can get this program. And so it means now the MDI will be able to explain it now, as from now. But I think the, as you are saying, that we don't have to create other institutions if there's a problem. I think we have managed this portfolio committee in terms of LISP, because the department came up with a policy that says LISP must be project based, and then we convinced them that is not going to be a proper route. It must be both project based as well as be open, so that people must go to the banks and they apply, and then the processes should be followed, the NHFC and so on and so on. So I think we have done a remarkable progress on that to influence the policy. A couple of issues that we need to raise with you, Honorable PM. The issue of MIG, M-I-G. No. I'm not going to say anything about RIG. No. I'm not going to open that. I'm negotiating. As Honorable DM has said to you, I don't give him time to rest. That process we are dealing with, I said, you will get it when it is right. So let's leave it there. Then, otherwise, he's on board, and he was agashle. Then the issue of MIG. What we have discovered is that those municipalities, district municipalities that have been accredited to administer a human settlement development program, IMIC funding has been withdrawn. How are they going to support? Because the fact that you accredit those district municipalities, you are giving them the opportunity to support the municipalities that are under their jurisdiction. And what you will find it very funny, this accreditation process, the municipalities are going, the district is going to be accredited, and as well as the municipalities are accredited. So I think there is a problem in the accreditation policy. But what is a concern is concerning us mostly is the issue of withdrawal of funds from those municipalities. Then the other issue is the issue of yes, we understand your quota in terms of using census, but when you get to the provinces like Northern Cape, it's a problem. It's even worse. We let 2011, the current census, because in other numbers, that population has come down. But they are also questioning that, but it's not going to work because we are using the census. But seemingly, it's a problem. And this province was receiving the lowest a budget in terms of HST. Now it's even worse, and they have got a lot of challenges. They are typology. You know, kukhona nje idawutwa izindlu ziyakhiwa kuse zingekho because of inatsika umhlaba wabo uyanqibili uyamuva. So it means we need to make sure that areas ezindlalo they are considered. We are not lobbying for them, no. But it's a fact. It's a fact, but because it's a reality, we have been there, and you have witnessed the these issues. And the other issue, seemingly they've been also identified as a corridor. There's an area there. I don't know what area is that one that has been declared as a development corridor. I know it's Saldana, I'm not sure. But seemingly, the budget does not speak to that. So seemingly, it's also a challenge. Then the other one is the issue, I'm not going to, this one I don't think it belongs to you, the issue of the systems to detect, for early detection of the public servants that are doing business with government. I think it falls under public service, but I'm not sure. But I think if it does, you can assist on that. So there's this issue of MIG again that is coming up in terms of addressing the bulk infrastructure for human settlements related development. You know, we yes, sometimes this is about bully because we are fighting for human settlements development when we get to these municipalities. But no one is giving us a direct policy, a clear policy that says 50% of the MIG must go to human settlements development. We must be open to this one. And Gobalos, Nati, we are claiming in development, human settlement. So, as far as it gets, 50% farmer, we human settlements, good bulk. But we don't know. No one ever brought this. Now, Baba Chongomlom, Pangasit is an interpal where I is, Mato. So, National Treasurer can assist us so that at least that has been a confidence now. Yeah, bon. I think those are the issues. Is there any other issue?
There is also on MIG. So you give the small municipality and the money for the MIG, but you know very well that there is no capacity there. Then they will get the money back. The problem is the funding. Of course, they have no capacity. Even the one who has got maybe a safe home, we wake up about the 2 months and then leave because there's no money. They have no capacity to pay the people who work with them and the skills. But you keep on giving the money, you know very well that they are able to send money back. Thanks.
No, thank you, Chair. The other one was the issue of the flood disaster transfers. Thank you, Chair. Yes, yes. And sometimes there is a tremendous delay, which has an impact on service delivery. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just still on the MIC, there is always this tension between the district and the local municipalities when it comes to the allocation. And I think Honorable Machoba has put the nail on the coffin when he spoke about the capacity. Between those two, which one is best suited in terms of capacity to be able to roll out the bulk infrastructure in as far as MIC is concerned? Because every time when we do oversight, Deputy Minister, the issue we get is that housing cannot happen because of lack of bulk infrastructure. Yet you look at their books, they haven't spent on the MIC funding. So which ones between those two are best capacity? Because of at times they just pass the ball and say, okay, the district hasn't released the funds, why do you give the funds to the district? And then the local will say, when you give it to them, they say, no, the local doesn't have capacity. So it's a catch-22 situation. What do you propose and recommend them?
Yeah, I think another thing on this issue of MIC, when we interact with the province, the Human Settlements Development Department, they will say, no, we don't have a say on MIC. So to us, it sounds funny because we believe that they are there to make sure that there is human settlements bulk infrastructure. Why can't they be able to monitor it in terms within their portfolio? Because you have to act within their portfolio. You make sure that your portfolio is achieving its intended purpose.
Upcoming engagement, and I'm now a bit under pressure, but I will take this with the issue of MIG. Seems to be most of the questions that have been asked have to do with the municipal infrastructure grant. And I think I should just get somebody who deals with MIG. You find an opportunity to ask all questions relating to municipal infrastructure grant. And if there is anything that, you know, the issue of grants is an area where I would imagine that as the Treasury we have more control over, because they are called conditional grants. We are able to put in conditions as may be required and as directed by yourselves. And it would be useful to assist us whenever those grants, if there are issues, because the grants are linked to our Division of Revenue Act, and Division of Revenue Act is an annual piece of legislation. So we only have the guideline of how to draft the DORA, but you can change it every year to suit that particular situation. We'll find that, and that is why on RIG we actually have those issues and we're working on it, because we're saying let's get the inputs so that when we actually implement it, we implement it in a manner that would... For me, it's not like... That goes to your question with regards to who is better placed to implement, whether it's district or the municipality. For me, it is... Whoever is going to be able to serve the interests of the people on the ground better. At times it may be the national that has got the capacity. At times it may actually be the local that has got the capacity. So let's deploy funds where they are going to achieve the desired outcomes. I don't care who's got the money, as long as the person who's got the funds has got a plan, as long as that person has got the capacity. As you are saying, comrade, as long as that person has actually got the political will to implement. Because some people actually have got the capacity, have got everything, but there is just no political will. It's just not going to happen. So you sit with the funds, we'll be rolling them over again. So we need somebody must be able to demonstrate that all those exist, that the funds flow. and let the funds flow. And the issue of accountability and people being able to report, as you're saying, we should assist you in making reports available so that we come to the relevant committees. If you call upon us to come and report, we should be able to come and say, this is how we have fared. And that's unfortunately at times the problem with us at the Treasury, because we can only say that this is the picture. So, you know, when somebody pulls up a mirror in front of you, if what you see there you don't like, it's a pity, because it's you. Hard luck, but it's you. That's how you look like. If you think you need to go and have a shave, go and have a shave. And if you think you can put on mascara and look nice, even though you know that it's not entirely nice, it's your business. But all we are doing, here is a mirror. No, but this man is ugly. No, but it's you. But this is exactly how you look. So that's what we do at times. But I think we should be assisted by yourselves where you are placed to direct where it's supposed to be directed. The flood disaster, I agree with you, Mr. Buller. At times, we take the blame for having not released. You know the story I was talking about where the issue has taken long to be resolved, where you have a business case that doesn't make sense. There is no way we will release funds. You know, there were floods in 2011. I think it was 2011. I sat in a number of meetings where we were supposed to decide and allocate funds. Every time we got there, relevant departments were not able to tell us exactly how much is required, where and for what. Because if you then put funds, because you are emotionally charged because there has been floods, you will still end up with the same outcome of funds having not been spent because people didn't have a proper evaluation of where the funds are required and what the funds are supposed to do, and for the funds to flow, a proper business case that is based on. And a year down the line, when I was called to another meeting, I got in there, I said, you know, I don't understand what this meeting is about, because the floods were an emergency and it happened last year. If you go to that community now and say you have come to address the issue of the floods, they will ask you, which floods? Which floods are you talking about? We haven't had floods in a year. So which ones are you addressing? Which issues are you addressing here? You know? If a bridge gets washed away because of the floods, it needs to be repaired and replaced as soon as yesterday because the road needs to start functioning. So even if you were busy building another road, the department should actually now begin to focus on this emergency so that this can start flowing. And there are processes to be able to move the funds around to be able to do that. So it's not like really waiting for money to flow. It's just using the existing legislation to be able to respond to the emergency whilst you finalize the process of getting other funds. So every time I sit in meetings where we talk about the funds and we are able to say to people, but here is money in this department before you even call on additional. And there is no budgeting that does not have contingency reserves. Contingency reserves are meant for unforeseen and unavoidable imperatives like those disasters. So it is something that if you don't have the capacity, you are not able to respond. If you don't have the capacity to do the normal, what happens when you have the extraordinary happening? Then you are in a much deeper situation. So allow us. I mean, if you need any assistance, we are quite happy to come to the party. But on MIG, I think we need a session. I think we need a session, and I will bring you a technical person, and perhaps I will be there so that I will do the distilling. So that it's not only the technical side, but it's also the political side.
Thank you very much, Comrade DM. I think we are very much satisfied with the interaction, and they have already alluded to say this is not the first, this is not the last. It means there's still a long way because we cannot work in isolation with National Treasury, because all of the funding issues, they are around National Treasury. And then the departments, when they come before us, sometimes they tell us another story. And I think the issue of RIC is one of them, but as well, I was saying we are trying to mend that one. So I believe we are going to have that interaction, even if we are not there, even during this period of MTBVS, because I think it would be much proper if you can make recommendations to the Office of the Minister.
Thank you so much, honorable members. Severed for a meeting. Members, we are going to particularly list the cost. We're going to undertake an